Dealing with the Pentagon posed a different set of problems. Increasingly skeptical about the use of air power, the White House began asking for more expansive military options in late 1998. The cruise missiles had the obvious advantage of keeping U.S. troops out of harm's way. But they delivered limited punch, and it took roughly 6 hours to get a presidential decision to fire them, then program them, spin the gyroscopes, and finally fly the missiles to the target, time in which bin Laden might depart. And all that assumed that the intelligence was reliable in the first place. Clinton wanted to hear about boots on the ground, plans that put U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan to get the Saudi terrorist. A request for options was made to the Pentagon. In response, General Hugh Shelton, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, briefed a small group meeting in Berger's office overlooking the White House front lawn. The presentation was brisk and comprehensive. Shelton rattled off the factors determining what the military would require to do the job. There was no reliable information about bin Laden's whereabouts at any given time. There was a great deal of uncertainty about the environment that the troops would be entering. There was no good staging area in the region. Closing off a large area would require tens of thousands of troops, and that in turn meant lots of lift, large transport planes, and therefore a sizable number of air refueling tankers. Search and rescue units would also be required. The list went on. One participant remembered the presentation as the Pentagon's usual two-division, $2 billion option. Another called it the canonical option. It was not what the assembled had hoped for. Hugh Shelton was a former commander-in-chief of U.S. Special Operations Command, SINCSOC, the first ever to become chairman of the Joint Chiefs. Berger's group had hoped he would want to show what America's Special Operations Forces could do. Instead, Sandy Berger felt he was having déjà vu, reliving the discussions from 1993 to 1995 about intervening in Bosnia, which the military opposed. This time, Berger felt, the chiefs had more justification for their position, though he was not happy about where they came out. The absence of a staging area would make operating in Afghanistan genuinely difficult. They didn't want to do it. They weren't crazy. There was just no enthusiasm and creativity. In this case, risk aversion and logic converged. The episode left a bad taste. The civilian leaders, except Secretary of Defense Bill Cohen, who backed up his chairman, felt that the Pentagon was blowing them off when they badly needed a solution. Shelton was annoyed because he felt that the administration's political leadership was looking to the military to solve a problem of diplomacy and intelligence. Unrealistic expectations were being heaped on the uniforms. Of the core agencies in the counterterrorism community, the one least troubled by the rise of Al-Qaeda was the FBI. The Bureau did one thing very well: investigate crimes that had been committed. After August 7th, the FBI was in its element, throwing itself into the investigation of the attacks. Scores of agents were flown to Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, and with the leads provided by Odeh and Al-Owali, the work progressed rapidly. The FBI excels at solving major crimes. It hurtles forward, an unstoppable juggernaut. The problem was that the Bureau moved only in one direction. There seems to have been no reflection on the fact that Islamist terrorists had bombed American sites on two continents in 5 years and were showing an unprecedented level of skill, or on the possibility that all these conspiracies might be linked. There was little or no analysis of the phenomenon, and at least in the Bureau's headquarters, no effort to see the big picture. We should have gone through every single freaking piece of information and really reconstructed every bit of it, including the court stuff, the intelligence, all of it, says Bob Blitzer, who pushed for such an effort when he was one of the Bureau's top counterterrorism officials until he retired in 1998. I don't think that's ever been done. On paper, at least, the FBI acknowledged its responsibility for tracking and surveilling terrorists in the United States and preventing terrorist acts. That was spelled out in many documents, including presidential decision directives. And in some areas, such as dealing with right-wing extremists after the Oklahoma City bombing, the Bureau took the mission seriously. That was not the case with Islamist terror. Deeply rooted habits deep within came into play, leading the Bureau to favor crime solving and not terrorism prevention. Counterterrorism was largely new to the Bureau in the 1990s. It was housed in the National Security Division, which had historically been a small operation next to the Criminal Division, the dominant force within the institution. An essential part of counterterrorism work involves intelligence gathering, but for a generation of special agents in charge, the barons of the FBI, this was unattractive work. Intelligence investigations do not contribute to the statistics, crime solved, prosecutions generated, that the SACs view as a key component of their individual records. The Bureau was not about this kind of tedious work. It was about what the SACs knew, putting criminals in jail. It's a culture of guys who are unwilling to change from standard police work to sophisticated counterterrorism and counterintelligence work, explains Blitzer. Those cases are hard and can ruin your career because of potential fuck-ups in times of great stress. Agents also do not recognize that terrorism has implications beyond those of, for example, mob crimes. Matthew Levitt, a leading expert on Hamas, who was a terrorism analyst at the FBI until early 2002, says that agents and the institution's leadership don't understand that they are part of the national security apparatus. To them, a criminal is a criminal, a case is a case. Terrorism is just another case. The FBI does not think retrospectively or project over the horizon. They don't understand intelligence and they don't appreciate analysis.